Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We start first, though, with the Saints. New Orleans 48, Philadelphia 7. And after an absolute beatdown like that, I've got only one question. What the hell did Philly do to Sean Payton to deserve that? Because that was a felonious beating, an absolute hospital job, the kind of curb stomping that was not just felt in Philadelphia, but across the entire NFL. That was the defending champs getting treated like a freaking speed bag. And the refs should have stepped in to stop that fight. I mean, Sean, my man, you know it was Minnesota that knocked you out of the playoffs, right? That it was Case Keenum and Stephon Diggs connecting on that miracle, not the dudes in green wearing the dog masks. Because you only lay a number on somebody like that if there's more to it. You only keep the pedal on the floor and the offense on the field if there's a reason to do so. It's got to be deeply personal. Somebody must have wronged you. Or maybe it was this. With all the talk last week about that epic showdown tonight between Andy Reid and Sean McVay, between Pat Mahomes and Jared Goff, between the Rams and the Chiefs on Monday night, with all of that talk, maybe Sean Payton wanted to deliver a statement of his own Sunday. Statement being, we are the team to beat, and you do not want anything to do with us. You want nothing to do with the Saints. Nothing. And he made his point. Message received. The team is freaky. They've got weapons falling out of their pocket on O. The defense does look legit. And they've got a coach who's got a chip on his shoulder the size of a freaking boulder. And a couple of weeks after putting it on the Rams, it was the defending champs' turn to take a beating. Philly fan, I'm going to be straight with you. Nothing can take away from the fact that you won that Lombardi. You will always have that. However, that is an L that a Super Bowl champ has never taken. Literally, there have been 98 champs since the NFL started back in 1920. Not a single defending world champion has worn it as badly as the Birds did yesterday down in NOLA. Eagles defensive end Chris Long said after the game, quote, I haven't gotten my ass kicked like that in a long time, end quote. No one has, Chris. No one. Not your dad, not your brother, pretty much nobody at all. Drew Brees just ran a junior high track and field day up and down the backs of your defense. 22 of 30 for 363, four touchdown passes, and each one more cold-blooded than the next. And it started early. First quarter, he threads the needle from 3 yards out to Austin Carr. 10-0. Tough throw. Second quarter, he fit the ball in perfectly to rookie Traquan Smith at the goal line. An even tougher throw. Third quarter, Mike Thomas, one-on-one, pump, go, absolute dime. You could not put the ball in a better spot to a better receiver. And then finally, the one everybody was talking about, the saltiest one of them all, in a 31-point beatdown. Fourth and seven, fourth quarter, Breeze in the gun, Alvin Kamara split wide, 37-yard house call.
Breeze takes the snap, drops back, looks to his right, lofts one down the sideline. Alvin Kamara caught it to 10, into the end zone! Alvin Kamara, 38 yards, and the Saints continue to dance in the Superdome.
Saints Radio. And that right there is as close to a cheat code as you're ever going to see. Pure marksmanship at quarterback, scariest pass-catching running back on the planet, split wide in the Eagles, having to sit there and just wear it. What Breeze is doing right now is insane. Insane. 25 TD passes, one interception, and a stat line like the one he had yesterday actually lowered his completion percentage. And the amount of weapons, again, this guy has at his disposal is a nightmare for anybody trying to keep this guy in check. 9 straight wins. None of them have been more impressive than what we saw yesterday. You want to know how good this team is? Check this quote from Mark Ingram. Quote, we got the best punter in the game, and he didn't even play. Why should he? Why even keep a punter on roster? They don't need a punter. The Saints can turn fourth and long into a home run and do it because they want to, because they can. Why waste a roster spot on a punter? And bottom line, you can watch tonight's game. You can see two absolutely amazing offenses go to work tonight. Monday night is going to be elite on elite. However, yesterday, the best team in the NFL made its statement. Statement being, get the hell out of our way. Get the hell out of the way because New Orleans means business. And in that house, on that field, in front of that crowd, there's nobody better. Not right now. There is nobody better, and they got a chip on their shoulder. If they're going for it on fourth down and they're pouring it on like that, they have got a chip on their shoulder. They're angry. They're hungry and they're angry. And for the record, I've got no problem with it. I've got no problem with them going for it on fourth down like that. I mean, I'm not going to go with something lame and cheesy like, hey, if you don't like it, stop it. But if you don't like it, stop it. To me, the issue is not why were they doing it up 31. The issue to me is, what the hell were the defending champs being down 31? They got some real problems. Philadelphia does. And so does anybody else who gets onto the same field with the Saints, especially in their house. 1-800-636-8686. All right, off the top. Oh, Alvy. Welcome back, Alvy. Alvy's back in the house. Alvin DeLauro to Italy and back in a single week. Dude was in Rome. He was in Venice. He made it back Saturday night. And here he is for the short work week. Way to go, Alvy. Hey, Alvy, you didn't get nice with Mill, did you? You didn't plant your seed again, did you? I don't need a budget for another 9-week vacation for you, do I? He's back. You know how I know he's back? One, there's not a ginormous forehead on the other side of the glass. No offense, James Kelly. And number two, Alvy's quick. All of a sudden, I can just feel the energy. He's back. James Kelly, still looking for that psych drop from last week.
Psych.
That's the one. Alvin got it just like that in 1 second. James Kelly's still looking around for it. First email of the week says, Dear Rome, I can't believe my luck. Somehow we've won some games, and our rival team's quarterback is out for the season. Perhaps it won't matter that I can't think and chew gum at the same time. Signed, Jason Garrett. Boy, isn't that the truth? You know Jerry Jones never wanted to fire him anyway. Jerry Jones does not want to fire the ginger. He loves him. Loves him like the son he never had. Except the guy was going to leave him no choice, right? A couple of weeks back, we were all calling for this guy's head, talking about how he was an unbelievable clapper, but really couldn't coach. And then what happens? He runs into two of the more disappointing teams in the NFL, the Eagles and the Falcons, a couple of paper champs. And then Alex Smith has his stick shattered. And all of a sudden, the Cowboys now look like they're in the driver's seat in the NFC East. Best thing ever for Jerry Jones. I mean, they're still not going to win anything that matters, but at least he has a reason to say, oh, why would I fire that guy? Look at us. We're going to win the division. Hey, Rome, I don't want to hear any talk about Alex Smith being a warrior. Walk off on your own power, you coward. I scored on a freaking broken leg to win the game once. Suck it up, Alex. Yours, G. Jennings.
Dog, I got to do this. I put a team in my back, though. My leg broke. I don't know how the I'm running right now, though. I'll do this for Madden. I put the team on my back, dude. It. You can't stop me. Cross the plane. Touchdown. Greg Jennings.
Cowards.
Aaron in Omaha. Hey, Aaron, you know that that didn't really happen. You know that's a video game, right?
Omaha.
You also know that Alex Smith shattered his leg yesterday. The same exact injury to the day decades later that Joe Theismann suffered. You know that, right? You know that your joke, not only is it too soon for that joke, there was never a time for it. My man had two broken bones in his leg. It was terrifying. Aaron in Omaha, War Frost, rolling into Iowa this Friday and kicking those idiots out wandering around asses. And one more as I go to break. Dear Jim, after watching several games yesterday, I've concluded that the level of coaching in pro football is abysmal. In my opinion, Jimmy, when it comes to hiring NFL coaches, politics plays as much a bigger role than ability. Signed, Condoleezza Rice. War the president, selecting people based on their experience and appointing Andy Reid as Secretary of State. Secretary of State. And Mrs. Alvin as Secretary of Labor. Signed, Denlesk's Rat Publican Party Cheddarman. Damn, dude. Take it easy. Denlesk's. Saturday, November 24th, Oscar de la Hoya's Golden Boy Promotions presents Chuck, the Iceman Liddell, as he returns to the cage to take on the Huntington Beach bad boy Tito Ortiz in the third and final chapter of their historic rivalry at the Fabulous Forum, plus a fully stacked undercard of competitive MMA talent. Do not miss another chapter of this historic rivalry. Saturday, November 24th at the Forum. Tickets start at $30 and they're available at Ticketmaster.com. or by calling 800-745-3000. 800-745-3000. Another wild weekend in the NFL. I've got Write the Guy, or just got to break it all down. Former NFL player, 7 years in the NFL, an NFL analyst, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, and you can follow him at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Jim. How about yourself?
So good, Ross. I'm doing great. Always good to have you on the show. Ross, let me start right with the Saints. The Saints did a real number on Philadelphia yesterday. What do you make of how they looked and how they played and what they've become?
Well, I think they're the best team in the NFL. I'm not sure it's really even close at this point. I mean, we'll see tonight what we see from the Rams and the Chiefs, but Drew Brees is playing as well as any quarterback ever has. It's interesting, because the way Patrick Mahomes got off to that fast start, it's almost like Brees has been in his shadow a little bit, but it's ridiculous. I mean, 77% of his passes, that's hard to do if there's no defense over there, let alone actually doing it in NFL games. They've done an unbelievable job getting the ball to Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, clearly. And the other thing is, too, Jim, look at the last couple of weeks. Their defense is getting better. Their defense is making plays. And that might be as much of a reason as any as I give them the leg up over the Chiefs or the Rams.
Ross Tucker joining us. Now, Ross, if that were a college game, people would be freaking out about Sean Payton going for it on fourth down with a 31-point lead in the fourth quarter. Do you have any issue with it at all?
Well, I get, you know, I was with Sean briefly in Dallas under Parcells, so I guess I kind of understand his mindset a little bit. So I wasn't surprised, because he is very, very aggressive. He doesn't really care about hurting feelings. I would say no, Jim. You know, in the NFL, this is pro football. You only have 46 guys suit up. You know, did he not have to go for a 4th and 7? Maybe, but I think in the NFL, you'd always rather err on being a little aggressive rather than potentially, and I think he knows deep down that the Eagles weren't going to make a comeback or anything like that, but I think you'd always rather err on the side of being aggressive than giving them any kind of chance. And, you know, I mean, if they hadn't completed, then he was giving the Eagles some life by not putting it in that situation.
Right, Ross. I mean, who cares? I mean, it does not bother me in the least. Ross Tucker joining us. Now, Ross, you're really familiar with the Philadelphia Eagles because you work on the pregame show. What do you make of this Eagles team? Exactly what has happened to them this year?
I'm stunned by it. And one of my big takes from it, Jim, has been just how impressive it is that the Patriots are good year in and year out. Because just seeing what's happened to the Eagles, and you see some of its injuries, but a lot of it, Jim, like the week before against the Cowboys, their scripted plays, they had mental errors on their first four plays. Now, you cannot tell me that these guys are as dialed in or as locked in this year. They're just not. And maybe it's because they won the Super Bowl. Maybe it's because they have some new guys. I don't know what it is. But, Jim, you know the deal. You go over your script on Friday in practice. Saturday, you walk through it. Saturday night in the hotel. For them to have mental errors on the first four plays, and Doug Peterson said this publicly in Philly, to have mental errors on the first four plays when you've had 3 days to know what they are. I've never heard of that in my life. They clearly have a lack of attention to detail, a lack of focus. Jason Kelce said last week they're not as accountable. So that goes on the players. It goes on the coaches. They're clearly not getting themselves ready to play. But I also say this in fairness to them. I mean, the end of that game against the Saints this Sunday, they had two guys with the last name Sullivan playing. I don't even know the difference. One guy's name is Chan, and the other one guy's name is Trey. They had Cravon LeBlanc out there. I mean, they have guys legitimately playing in their secondary right now that should probably not even be on NFL teams, let alone playing in the Troy Aikman-Joe Buck game against Drew Brees.
Ross Tucker joining us. It's well said. Look, they're banged up in the secondary. This is a fact. We know this. But, Ross, going back to your first point, it's funny. I was on the NFL on CBS this past weekend, and I was talking to Phil Simms off the air. He made the same exact point that you made, that once you get there and you win it all and you've gotten to the top of the mountain and you've got some money in the bank, that you don't have that same level of attention and detail. And he said the exact same thing that you did. That's what makes the Patriots so impressive, that they're there every single year and they never seem to have that issue. Now, what about this notion of like brain drain? The Eagles no longer have Frank Reich, for instance, on their coaching staff. What do you make of the job that he's done with the Colts this season?
He's done an unbelievable job. I mean, you know, they've won four in a row. They're 5-5 now. Luck has not been sacked in five games. That is incredible. I mean, that is really, really hard to do. Reich has to get a lot of credit for that, because I'll also say this. There's been a lot more pressure on Wentz this year. The offensive line for the Eagles has not played as well. And I think it's not just when you lose Reich. It's when you also lose DeFilippo, who goes to Minnesota. I think they probably could have afforded, Jim, to lose one of those guys. I think losing both has really, really hurt the Eagles. And think about it, Jim. I know you from, you know, when Kyle was there. You're always thinking about your business, the infrastructure, making sure you've got good people in place. If you lost your right-hand man, your two right-hand men, that would be very, very difficult on any organization. I think the proof is in the pudding with what Reich is doing with the Colts. I mean, he's kind of come out of nowhere now to be a legitimate candidate for Coach of the Year, just with what they're doing. I now think that the Colts are going to make the playoffs. They are on an absolute run right now. I mean, every game was close yesterday except the Saints over the Eagles and the Colts blowing out the Titans, which I really did not anticipate.
Ross Tucker joining us. Not only make the playoffs, but they may go in, and that's not a team that you want to see once you do get in. Ross, also, they've done such an amazing job of keeping Andrew Luck clean. He's gone five games without being sacked. You've got this great story from back in the day about Drew Bledsoe and what he would do for the offensive line when he didn't get sacked. What was the reward, and how much did that incentivize you?
Well, he would give us $500 cash, and I know, like, when you're making a lot of money like these NFL players are making, I know that that doesn't sound like much. You'd be amazed, Jim. You know, because you got a chance to – sometimes it was after the game on the plane. Sometimes it was Monday. You'd walk in and just – I don't care who you are, how much money you have. Getting $500 bills, it's a good feeling, man. I mean, it's kind of awesome. You look in your wallet, you got five hundos in there. You feel cool. You feel like big man. And it just, you know, we're already getting paid. You already want to do your job. But I always tell people, when it's personal, right, you just give a little bit extra. It's like when you're on a kickoff return team and you have an absolute stud. I don't care what anybody says. You don't want to be the guy that doesn't make the block and your returner could have taken it to the house. Same thing when you have a great running back. Same thing when you have a quarterback that's playing really well and you got this streak. You don't want to be the guy. So between that and Bledsoe picking up all the bar tabs of all the Labatt Blues we would drink up in Buffalo, you know, we love that guy and we did everything we could to try to keep him clean. I mean, that became something we legitimately talked about. Let's go for the 500.
That's a great story. Ross Tucker joining us. A really good story. So, Ross, we're talking about these great moments for offensive linemen. Now for the bad. If you're an offensive lineman, I mean, you were an offensive lineman. What do you think when you watch Khalil Mack do what he does and abuse offensive linemen the way he is?
Well, number one, I feel bad for whoever he's going against. And number two, I have a lot of frustration, Jim, when I watch Khalil Mack, that the teams are not doing a better job scheming for him and making sure that they have the proper double teams or chips. You know, I'm sick of seeing offensive tackles who have chip help, which is a running back running through his outside armpit and not jumping his inside half and slamming him shut right there. I see these guys taking these vertical sets and letting Mack, who's as powerful of a defensive end as we've seen, and that's his best move, really, is his power. Why these guys aren't closing the distance, Jim, is beyond me, right? So why are you dropping straight back and giving him that space to get that momentum? I don't really know what these offensive line coaches are doing or what the technique is by some of these offensive tackles. It's driving me crazy. Look, I couldn't block Khalil Mack once, not once, but I would at least have the best strategy to try to do it. And if I knew where my help was, he wouldn't beat me. I think it's crazy that these teams are letting him do this week in and week out. Give him credit because they're trying different ways. He's still figuring out a lot of times because he's going right down the middle of these offensive linemen. I mean, he's not just beating him, Jim. He's making these guys look real, real bad.
My man, preach. As somebody who went as hard as I did yesterday for the Vikings, preach. My frustration is at least at your level and not even higher because the guy did look unblockable, but give a guy some help. Have a better plan. Ross, one last thought. There have been rumblings that John Harbaugh's on the hot seat and the fact that his time might actually be over in Baltimore. Yesterday's a must-win game. So then you got Lamar Jackson out there rushing 27 times. It's the smart move because that's what he does best. Or is it a reckless move and the sign of a coach who's desperate to get a win and keep his gig? Where do you come out on what you saw?
I mean, it's probably a combination of both, right? But ultimately, Jim, when's the last time an NFL quarterback ran the ball 27 times? And by the way, a slenderly built quarterback at that. Even on that first drive where they went 11 straight runs, he was taking some shots. And I think it is reckless, to be honest with you, but I also think John Harbaugh says, you know what? I want to keep this gig. Flacco can't play. This is our best chance to win with Lamar Jackson. We're going to run the ball. I wonder, though, deep down, what Ozzie Newsome, what the owner, Steve Bisciotti, how they really feel about that. Because we all know, Jim, that that's not sustainable. I mean, my guess is that they'll try to run him less and have him throw a little bit more as they go. But 27 carries, never heard of that in my life. He made it through that game. I doubt he would even make it through two or three more games if they kept doing that.
Right. When was the last time? 1960. That was the last time. He is the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You can follow him at Ross Tucker NFL. Nobody does it better. Ross, great job. Really appreciate you, Ross. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Talk to you soon, Ross. I mean, seriously, nobody does it better. Ross Tucker is unbelievable. So follow him at Ross Tucker NFL. 27 carries. Was that a coach doing what he had to do to win a game and keep their season alive, or was that a desperate guy trying to keep his job? And is it reckless? I'm going to say it's both. I agree with him. I'm going to say it's both. You can't tell me the plan going into that game was, we're going to rush him 27 times. Our future franchise quarterback, the future face of the franchise, our first-round pick. You're going to run that guy 27 times? Not a good idea. Not if you want him to be your future quarterback. It's Thanksgiving Monday, so get that fix-it job done before the family gets to town and do it where the pros go, Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. This email is directed to Ross in response. Dear Ross Tucker, what do you mean Rome would struggle without his right-hand man? I think we have a talented and balanced staff, and I think the transition would be relatively seamless. Signed, James Kelly. War not playing soundbites timely to keep the clones on their toes. Tyler and Charlotte. I don't think anybody has any idea how good of a job Alvin does, especially with James Kelly, who had to sit in the chair and try and do what Alvin does while Alvin was frolicking with Mill in Venice and Rome. Where I'd kind of hint, give a little wink to James Kelly, like, hey, I need that drop. You know, 1-1000, 2-1000, Monday, Tuesday, right around Wednesday, he finally finds it. I'm like, where did that come from? Hey, boss, you asked for it. Yeah, right. On Monday, James, it's Wednesday. Salty Sarah weighs in on something also that Ross Tucker said. Salty Sarah tweets, it's not easy as it looks. Is it, Eagle fans? Hashtag 5 Super Bowls. He said the other problem, aside from losing key staffers, aside from the fact that they've got guys in their secondary that can barely play in the NFL, you've got this whole notion of they already did it. They're trying to repeat. It's hard to climb that mountain once again. It's hard to pay that price. I mentioned that I was talking to Phil Simms, and we were talking off air, and he said, do you have any idea how hard it is when you've got that money in your pocket already, when you've already made it to the top, when you've already won the entire thing? And Phil Simms made exactly the point to me off the air that Ross Tucker made. And Phil Simms said it yesterday. He said, this is why the Patriots are so impressive, because they don't suffer that same fate. They show up every single year. They're never complacent. And Belichick has a way of keeping these guys sharp and focused and locked in. And they never seem to have that same thing happen to them that happens to other champs. The thing that's happening to Philadelphia. And Mike D for 3 tweets. Again, going back to Ross Tucker. Man, you know Ross did a really good interview when I'm getting all sorts of reaction to different things that he said. Ross Tucker told a story about Drew Bledsoe and how the offensive line, if they kept him clean and he was not sacked, Bledsoe would hit every one of those guys with $500. And again, Ross's point was, it doesn't seem like that big of a thing. It doesn't seem like that much money to multi-millionaires. He said, but think about that for a minute. Who doesn't want 5 crisp $100 bills? Who doesn't like that? It means somebody's picking up your dinner. Somebody's picking up your bar tab. It's 5 crisp $100 bills. It feels awesome. Mike D for 3 in response to that tweets, War Andrew Luck handing out library cards to his linemen after not being sacked. Yeah, that or crisp flip phones. That motivate me. I saw a dude over the weekend with a flip phone. A legitimate flip phone. I was in the airport. I saw a guy with a flip phone. One, I wanted his autograph. Two, I wanted to get a picture with him. It's an amazing thing. Until I met Hawk, I used to say, Hawk's like, oh, great. Where's he going with this? Until I met Hawk, I used to think that whenever I saw somebody in public with a mustache, I wanted their autograph. Like, dude, you're a celebrity, right? You're special. You've got a mustache. And then I met Hawk, and that wrecked it for me. The flip phone thing, though, is real. I saw a dude in the airport with a flip phone using it. It took everything I had not to say, hey, man, you mind if I get a picture with you? Would you mind signing this autograph? Andrew Luck. Yeah, on top of that, all jokes aside, I think that he looks as good as he did prior to getting hurt. He's not going to win the MVP, but he should be in the conversation. At Jerry G 34 tweets, if Alvin DeLauro has another kid, does your offer of paying college tuition still stand if he names the kid Zorro? That was true. Back in the day, I said that if Alvin DeLauro named his kid Zorro, so the kid would be Zorro DeLauro, I would pay for the tuition. And to this day, Alvin's like, I should have taken him up on it. Nah, dude, I don't think that still stands. Why? Because my own kid's going to college now. Now I know what it costs. Now I know what's up. Jake is a senior in high school. I've got to get him in. You blew it, dude. Mill probably never let you forget that. It's just a name. What's a college education cost right now? Somebody do the math. I mean, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? That wasn't worth your kid being named Zorro. Not to mention, it's a badass name. Zorro DeLauro. Hawk's like, I'm having a kid in 2 months. What about me? I'll tell you what, Hawk. You have that kid in 2 months, and if you don't still suck at your job, you can keep it. How's that? Heads from Bacon tweets, Alvy goes to Italy for a week. Sans kids is more reckless than Harbaugh running Lamar Jackson 27 times. This guy ran Lamar Jackson 27 times. It's not like John Harbaugh wouldn't get a job in 5 seconds. Why is that particular job so important to John Harbaugh?
Jack
Jackson?
More important than Lamar Jackson's life? Because you're putting that life in jeopardy by running him 27 times. And your response may be, yeah, well, hey, Rome, it's your own rules. Scoreboard. Look up at it. They had to win and they did. They did. But if I'm ownership and I'm management and I burned a first-round pick on this guy, I think that I would want to develop him accordingly. I know this. I would not be running that asset into the defense 27 times. And he is pretty slight of build. 27 times? For who? For what? Great. You live to fight another week. Harbaugh's like, yeah, well, I got that win. You can't fire me now. Yeah, I don't know. If I were Ozzie Newsome, I don't know how happy I'd be about that. If I were ownership, I do not know how happy I'd be about that. Yes, you got to win. Against the Bengals, by the way. Horrible team defensively. I guess Hugh Jackson's not going to make a difference there either. Marvin Lewis brought him in. And then Lamar Jackson runs it 27 times and they lose to the Ravens. That would make me really nervous with a first-round pick. I would not be doing that. And then I mentioned Rex. The class clown, the jungle class clown that's Rex, and that there are four or five other idiots in the class that think that Rex is funny, hyping him up. Like, here's one. At TWA 37 Heavy. As an example, I've never heard of that guy. He tweets, Rex never disappoints. The queen is in. Ms. Nika. Nika 989. Since James Kelly is not on the board, Alvin, I think I could just throw this to you. For those who do not know the queen, give them a little taste. Dude, I am James Kelly.
Now, I'm out of money for season tickets, and the only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, and take him home for the night and ruin him. I'm out.
Danica, all right, did you hear that? I want to play that back really quickly one more time. This is the queen, Danica, from Jacksonville. And she was talking about what it was like back in the day being a Jags fan and what her plan was at the game.
Now, I'm out of money for season tickets, and the only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, and take him home for the night and ruin him. I'm out.
The only thing I can do is go to the games, get drunk, find a little tenderoni, take him home, and ruin him. With that set up, I read this tweet. Send Rex to me. I'll straighten him out. The Queen, Danica. 1-800-636-8686. Are there any calls that you like here, Adam Hawk? All right. Let's go to Calgary. Bob in Calgary. I know that name. I'm not sure why I know that name. I know that guy, and I can't quite place it. Now, what the hell? It's a short week. I'm feeling good. Bob in Calgary. What's going on, Bob? How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Took my wife to a nice supper at this expensive joint in Calgary called Alloy. And who's sitting there all by herself looking sad? Sarah Jessica Parker. I went up to her. I said, hey, what's with the long face, horse head?
That's how I know that guy. He's the SJP guy. Help me understand a few things. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. And I know some of you are like, yeah, here comes Rome with his mock indignation. There's nothing mock about this. I mean, I've gone from pissed to really befuddled. Why does that guy do that? Why do any of you do what you do? Like, there's no wink-wink to this. There's no inside thing to this. I don't think that's funny. I don't think that's cool. I don't think that's good for my show. I don't want to hear from a programmer or a suit saying, what is it, Rome, with these calls that you get about Sarah Jessica Parker and her long face? And why are you talking about her and how she looks? And I can't tell you how many times, thanks, Alvin. Thanks for nothing. It's not me. Yeah, but Rome, and this is what I get. This literally is what I get from programmers and the suits in New York. Yeah, it's not you, but it's your responsibility. It's your show. And I get that. And he's right. It's true. I'll never forget, way back in the day when I want to say I was 16, and my old man had a high-performance luxury whip. And he was never about that life. My old man was great. So, like, he owns a business, and he does pretty well. And literally at that point in his life, he was 50. He could afford any car he wanted, I guess. But he was like that old school Boston. Yeah, I'm not about that. I'm not about that. I don't have anybody. I'll never forget him. It, like, up in my grill. I've got nobody to impress. Nobody to impress. Why would I do that? For who? For what? I don't need that. I don't need to do that. Because I'd be like, hey, Pops, you busted your ass, man. Why don't you get a nice European sled? Why don't you treat yourself? Why? For who? For what? I don't need that. So the old man used to drive like 50,000 miles a year on an Oldsmobile or a Buick and just dominated it. Loved it. Loved it. Now, my mom, on the other hand, she kind of liked that life. She had a nice sports car. So finally, the old man gives in for his 50th birthday and treats himself, buys himself a nice rig, gets himself a Jaguar. So he says to me one day, he's like, hey, do me a favor. Go down the street. We need to feed our friend's horses. They're out of town. Do that for me. You can take the new car. I'm like, yeah, all right, I'll do that. I'll do that. These people have horses. They live on this hill, this crazy incline. And I stop halfway up the hill, and the thing locks in drive and the transmission. I'm like, holy crap, I'm jamming on this thing. I can't get it into park. I can't get it into reverse. It's stuck. This thing snapped in drive. Terrified to call the old man, like I wrecked his new car. Call him up. I tell him, he's enraged. He's like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I'm like, hello? This isn't my fault. He's like, really? Who was driving the car? I was, Dad. It's your fault. I'm like, what do you mean it's my fault? This is not my fault. The car's stuck in drive, all right? I didn't do it. And this went on. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. You're responsible. You're the one driving the car. It's your fault. I'm like, damn, this is incredible. This is incredible. Yeah, I couldn't get him off that point. Like, literally years later, it comes out there was a default in the manufacturing, and I was not the only one that happened to. It was, like, happening to everybody. Buddy, put it in my head. It's my responsibility. The point of the story is, when I have an idiot like Bob in Calgary talking about Sarah Jessica Parker, he's the idiot whose transmission. The transmission of this show snapped when that guy called. But it's my fault, because it's my show. Hawk? Like, I'd blame you, Hawk, for letting him through, but you're my fault, Hawk. I hired you. It's all my fault. But I'm here to tell you, I'm not going to let you morons be the transmission that got stuck and snapped on my show. Man, I knew that guy. I just could not remember how I knew that guy. We're joined by a wide receiver for UCF, Trey Nixon. Hey, Trey, how are you?
Good, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good, much better. Doing great. All right, so Saturday night, you had number 24 Cincinnati coming to the Bounce House for a nationally televised game, a chance to make a real statement. So what was the mindset and the attitude in the locker room before that game?
You know, the mindset was just treating it as another game. You know, for us, we just go in there, you know, go into our game plan. We know the coaches put front throughout the week what we did in practice. So it was just another game for us going there and just to execute.
Well, then Cincinnati comes in and they get up early on, and it might have been easy for you guys to kind of panic, but from the outside, it looked like there was no panic whatsoever. Did you ever sense that anybody was at all worried?
No, not at all. I mean, our coaches do a good job preaching to us, you know, just taking one play at a time. You know, we'll play every play like it's its own, and, you know, always think the score is 0-0. So, I mean, for us, unfortunately, we did have that fumble in the beginning of the game on the first drive, but, you know, for us, we just want to know when we came back out on offense, you know, just to execute, treat it as it's still 0-0.
UCF wide receiver Trey Nixon, my guest. So in the second quarter, the offense had a 3rd and 10 from the 36. What did you see on that play, and then what did you make of the pass that Mackenzie Milton threw to you for a TD?
You know, I mean, just on the coverage, I mean, I saw those press covers. I saw the safeties kind of rolled over to the opposite of half. So, you know, I'm always thinking, you know, I got to get open on this play, you know, because, I mean, I'm going to be the first read. So, I mean, just running my route, you know, get open, get off the release, and, you know, just Mackenzie threw a perfect pass. And, you know, just executed the play.
You know, head coach Josh Heupel and I have talked about the atmosphere in the Bounce House, and you had the second largest crowd in school history Saturday night. So how much did that fire you all up, and how good did it feel to come away with a 38-13 win? I mean, an emphatic win over the 24th team ranked team in the country.
You know, I mean, it felt great. I mean, coming from an SEC program, you know, I played against Alabama. I even played against the rivalry Alabama versus Ole Miss when I was at Ole Miss, you know, and the atmosphere that we played in versus Cincinnati. You know, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was just, like, electric. I mean, that first drive that Cincinnati had, I could barely even talk to the person next to me. So, I mean, it was just really good just to play in front of a home crowd like that, really good home field advantage. And, you know, it was just a blessing to come out and get that W.
Yeah, Trey, you mentioned your SEC background. You started your college career at Ole Miss, but then you made the decision to go to UCF. What was that decision like for you, and what was it about UCF that made it feel like that was the right place for you?
Yeah, you know, when I made the decision to end up transferring, it was a hard decision. Talked to my family a lot about it. But one of the big things I wanted to do coming from Ole Miss was, you know, just go somewhere that's home to me. And I feel like Central Florida, coming from Vieira, Florida, it's about 30 minutes from Orlando. So I felt like just like the first thing for me was to find a place that was home. And, you know, just being that close to my family, being that close to home was really good. And UCF coming off a, you know, undefeated season, Peach Bowl champs. Kind of felt like it was a no-brainer to come to a Coach Hype's offense, you know, and compete with the best of them.
Well, of course, Ole Miss is a traditional power, so you know what it takes to succeed at a high level. When you first arrived at UCF and you looked around and you saw all that talent on offense, what kind of thoughts did you have?
You know, just know that these boys love to compete. I mean, that's something I realized from day one. You know, like you said, coming from Ole Miss and the SEC, you know, I have all the talk, you know, SEC is the powerhouse. But, I mean, UCF, just being around these boys for as long as I have, I mean, we can compete with the best of them. I mean, everybody on this team has that drive, you know, that will to play. I mean, no matter who we're playing, we could play one of the worst teams in NCAA or one of the best. I mean, we're always going to play to our competition. So I feel like that's one thing that this team at UCF does a really good job about.
Trey Nixon joining us. Obviously, your quarterback had something to do with the decision. You haven't been there very long, but it sure seems like you and Mackenzie Milton have been able to get on the same page in a hurry. How would you describe the chemistry you have with him, and what makes him so unique or special as a QB?
You know, Mackenzie's really unique because he can really extend plays. I mean, he's a quarterback that has that dog in him. You know, he's always going to get the job done. He's a great leader. And, I mean, that's one thing that I realized when I first got on campus was just, like, how much of a leader he is. I mean, he's always pushing you, whether that's off-season, you know, in practice, during the game. He's going to constantly keep pushing you. And that's one thing that really, like, sticks out to me. And, you know, like I said before, we're just extending plays. I mean, a play might be dead, but he can roll out and just keep the play alive. So that's one thing that really does make him special.
Trey Nixon, my guest. You know, Trey, I mentioned you guys won 23 straight, 23 in a row. Yet it seems like a lot of folks still are not sold. It seems like some folks still look down on what you guys are doing or think maybe it's not that impressive. What's your reaction when you hear that? I mean, does it make you angry? Does it motivate you? What do you think?
I feel like if anything does, it does motivate us. I mean, you know, our motto is just take it 1 week at a time, go 1-0 each week. So, I mean, we don't pay too much attention to that. We just look at the next opponent in our schedule. But, I mean, if anything does, it does just motivate us, you know, just get the next win, you know, just keep going and keep the streak alive.
And listen, you've got a very level head about that. Is there any part of you, though, that feels like, hey, come on, we are undefeated this year. We beat another top 25 team. Exactly what do we have to do to get respect?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's always like in the thought in the back of your head. But, I mean, all that we can do is control what we can't control, you know what I mean? I mean, all we can do is just keep winning, you know, just keep trying to prove to the committee and everybody that we do deserve a spot in the playoffs, because I feel like we definitely do. I mean, all we can do is control what we can and, you know, just keep winning.
Trey Nixon, my guest. So what's it been like playing for Josh Heupel?
I mean, it's been great. I mean, Coach Heupel is a great leader. I mean, his offense speaks for itself. It's a really explosive, fast-paced, down-the-field offense. And, you know, like I said, I came from Ole Miss and they had a really fast offense, but the offense that Coach Heupel has and how fast he has it going, I mean, it's really, really, really special.
You know, Trey, something that keeps coming up when the coaches talk about you is your work ethic and the fact that you take the same exact approach every single day, every single practice, no matter what. And to me, that's really impressive, especially for somebody your age to figure that out. How would you describe that approach to practice, and where did the work ethic come from?
You know, just the work ethic come from, you know, just growing up around my dad and my brother. I mean, two people, my dad installed in me at an early age that if you want to go get something, you got to work for it. I mean, nothing's going to come easy to anybody who waits for it. So, and I feel like a lot of times as I got older, you know, transitioning from Ole Miss and all that, you know, you learn a lot the more you grow up. And one thing I did pick up on was, like, those who work and those who treat practices like a game, I mean, a lot of good things will come to them on the game time. So I feel like if I could get my body ready, you know, in the right shape, in the right mindset of everything before game day, by the time Saturday comes around, I've already been through it throughout the week.
He's a wide receiver for UCF. They're 10-0. They're 7-0 in conference. They're number 8 in the AP poll. They have ripped off 23 straight wins. And you have UCF at USF. That's coming up on Friday. Trey Nixon, my guest. Trey, great to have you on the show. Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really like talking to you, Trey. Thank you. I want to make that so clear. They've won 23 in a row. They just smashed another top 25 team. What does UCF have to do to get any respect? Because they're not getting the respect they deserve. I'm not saying crown them right now. I'm saying give them the respect they've earned. They've won 23 in a row. All right, my thanks to Trey Nixon, UCF, and USF coming up this weekend. Let's end hour number one with a phone call. Man, I hope this guy's coming at it the right way. I hope this guy's coming at it respectfully. I've got my doubts. I know this guy, I know his act. I'm trying to think of what happened over the weekend that this guy might go to. I'm trying to think whether or not this guy's going to finally accept the responsibility that he needs to accept as a guy who can get racked instead of run. Stop being a class clown. Or a hat. Let's find out. Let's go to the ABQ. Rex in Albuquerque. Rex, what's going on?
Hey, Jimmy. Hope you're doing well. You know, it's time to war World Toilet Day. I don't know if you know that was what it was today. But, you know, I just saw the Alex Smith injury, and I don't think it's as serious as everybody is making it out to be. He could have got up and walked that off. He didn't need the meat wagon to cart him off for what was just a mild inner vaginal pull, did he?
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
No, actually, Rex, I think that he did need the meat wagon. I don't think that he could have walked that off, Rex. You couldn't have. He couldn't have. Nobody could have. And I think you've confused the injury. Your diagnosis is not exactly what happened, Rex. No need for me to repeat your diagnosis. Except the actual medical experts on the field did not see it the way you did. This is why they had him in a cast before he got back to the locker room. Because he didn't suffer that injury. It was a devastating injury. He shattered his leg.
Running back is Byron Marshall. Here comes the blitz. They're coming clean. Alex Smith under heat. He's steamrolled at the 40-yard line. That takes him out of field goal range. And Alex Smith is hurt. Alex Smith is hurt. He clutched his right knee as he went down, and he is hurt. And FedEx Field is silent. He's hurt bad, man. Look at him. He's in a lot of pain. He's got his hands over his face. I think he realizes that this is a serious injury. As we see the replay, it was the corner coming clean. And
oh, it's his ankle.
It's like his ankle. Looks like he could have a broken ankle.
No, he does have a broken ankle.
Or a shattered leg with two broken bones. I know what it's not. It's got nothing to do with female genitalia. Rex? That was a matter with you, Rex. Class clown, same old guy, thrown out of the class, sent to the principal, looking at detention, couldn't be more pleased with himself. Four or five members of the JTP are giving him high fives, thinks he's some sort of legend. The only thing that he said during that call that was true is that, according to Twitter, it is, in fact, World Toilet Day. It's trending. Now, I got to admit, I'd forgotten that. And then when he said that, I'm like, oh, I know exactly where he's going to go. It's Rex. I know his brand. And it's World Toilet Day. Except it was so much worse than I expected. Even from him. Yeah, I don't know, Rex. It would disappoint the five guys who like you. But at some point, since I know what I'm going to get from you and you never get racked, you only get run, you bring me down. I know it's a phone call from the suit that's coming my way. I don't know, Rex. I can't keep letting you in if you're going to keep doing crap like that. A Pac-12 football analyst. He is also a filmmaker. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is the host of the Life Without Limits podcast, and he does hold the distinction of being the first ever in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network and the only man who gets his own custom greeting on this show. Yogi Roth is my guest. Yogi, it is so good to see you, man. How are you?
I love it. I love coming here every time, and the growth of this show, what you've done, you always inspire me. But I love going to college campuses now. The next generation of listeners, they're on. And whenever I'm on, they're like, dude, saw you on Rome. That was awesome.
Oh, I love hearing that, by the way.
I appreciate
it. I mean that sincerely. I really, obviously, as somebody who's done this as long as I have, I love that the college kids know that you're on the show and hear you on the show. But, Yogi, really importantly, it is Thanksgiving week. We are into the crunch time in college football. I have one question and one question only. How great is ball?
It's awesome, man. I mean, this is why you live for this game. You know, for me, I mean, the essence of this game is the humanity within it and the competition that exudes from it. And that's exactly what we have this weekend in the Apple Cup, if you're looking at the Pac-12.
Oh, yeah.
UW, Wazoo, everything is at stake. Heisman candidacy, obviously the Pac-12 North, the potential Rose Bowl berth, but the argument of the college football playoff. And you can go around the country, and there's just great rivalry games here with Ohio State, Michigan, Bama, Auburn. I mean, you're going to find some real truths out about everybody. And, of course, in college football, we're over the top with the drama. I mean, we are just putting so much on this last week. So I love it, man. I can't believe it's here.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. We'll talk USC and UCLA also that went down this past weekend. But what about Washington State? Let me start with Washington State. When you look at them on film, what sticks out to you the most?
Well, I think there's a bunch of things. You have to start with Gardner Minshew. I mean, I love what Tua Tagovailoa has done, love what Kyler Murray's done, but how do you not love what Gardner Minshew's done? To me, honestly, Jim, it's the best story. This is my 18th year. I'm finishing up in college football. Best story, and I've been racking my brain all year, by far. I mean, you look at what happened with Tyler Helinski in the passing Washington State. Mike Leach possibly going to another college. This team projected at maybe four wins, losing their stars on the defensive side. And in comes in the Mississippi mustache. May 5th isn't there for spring ball.
It's insane.
And the best part is he understands the situation he's walking into, so he just lays low. And then late in the summer, he goes up to sixth-year senior Peyton Pallora, the captain at linebacker, and says, "Can I finally talk to the team now?" And he goes, "Yeah, go ahead. Go for it, man." After the workout in July, he addresses the team, and it's been his team ever since. And then he's led the nation in touchdown passes, in yards, a team that obviously is on the brink of some really special things. Find me a better story. I mean, find a better story in the country than Gardner Minshew. I don't think it exists.
I'm not sure there is one. Now, there's no doubt that there is power in the stash. We know this. But facial hair aside, what is the most impressive part to you about his game?
Yeah, I think it's his second and third reaction game. So first reaction game would be like when it's clean in the pocket. Can you beat Tom Brady, sit back and deal? Luke Falk clearly had done that and is the Pac-12's all-time leading passer. His second reaction game is when it gets a little dirty in the pocket. A D lineman comes in, he can avoid him. And then when a linebacker comes from depth, he can avoid him too and get to his third reaction, keep his eyes down the field, and deal. And this system, everybody thinks that, oh, it's four verticals, that's the air raid, everybody runs it, it's system. It's not. There's way more to that. It's timing, it's tempo, it's anticipation, and this guy plays with his eyes. You know, I hear analysts a lot say, you got to have great footwork in the pocket as a quarterback, and that's fair, but I believe you are trained from your eyes. So, for instance, if I took a piece of dental floss from your eyelids to your feet, they'd be connected, and where you looked, your feet would follow, and I think that's how you train a quarterback, and when you look at this young man, that's what he does. His eyes know where to go. His feet follow. Mechanically, he's not flawed, and he makes every type of throw in the catalog of passes, so I love everything about him. This system isn't just four verts. There's triangles that would make Bill Walsh fired up, like the West Coast systems. There's, of course, checking it down to your back, but this guy does everything, including galvanizes an entire community, makes one-handed catches on the sideline. I mean, throws for seven tugs last week, and he has done everything that I think is necessary to be a Heisman candidate and be one of the top quarterbacks in the country.
Huge, huge game, and it's got some national implications as well. Yogi Roth joins me in studio. USC loses to a two-win UCLA team, 34-27. What's that game say about where both those teams are right now?
A lot. I mean, number one, you know, everybody lauded the Chip Kelly hire, and we should. I remember going to the press conference, and it was like I was at a rock concert. You know, sure. It was bonkers. And you look at what they've done really since the Cal game. I called that game on the Pac-12 networks, and I'm calling the game against Stanford this Saturday with Ted Robinson and Jill Savage at noon. And they've just stayed the course. And it makes you think, if Wilton Spate wasn't hurt, the grad transfer in the second quarter of the Cincinnati game, maybe this team goes bowling. You know, they've played 20 true freshmen. 20, not 20 freshmen and redshirt freshmen combined. 20 true freshmen, including a right guard on the offensive line, two interior defensive tackles, five different receivers, two running backs, and obviously a quarterback in Dorian Thompson-Robinson. So you got to tip your cap to Chip Kelly of just staying the course. And there's this side of him, I think, as reporters where we're like, give us more. And he's just like, hey, guys, we're just going to keep working. We just keep chopping wood, carrying water, and that's what they've done. So I was really impressed. They dominated the lines of scrimmage. I watched it late last night, just kind of prepping for this and for the week. And physically, they won on both sides of the line of scrimmage, which you wouldn't have thought that was possible with what SC had coming back this year. So big props to UCLA where that program is. And that win is massive with this early signing period. UCLA, everybody's ripping them for only offering 56 guys. That's okay. They've offered the 56 they want, and they're going to get a couple more after last weekend's win.
Yogi Roth joining me in studio. Now, Yogi, I could talk to you more about the conference, but one of the things that I really like having you on this show is we could talk about life overall. Earlier this month, you wrote a really powerful piece for The Athletic about the shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. You played your college football at Pittsburgh. I know how much that city means to you. What was your reaction when you saw the alert on your phone that read, "Shooting in Pittsburgh Synagogue"?
Yeah, well, your heart kind of breaks whenever you see it. And then I think as a society, I don't know if you'd agree, but there's just another one. Oh, here comes another one type of mentality, which is sick, right? The fact that we can think that. And I was in my hotel in Northern California prepping for Stanford Wazoo. and calling that game that night. And I texted the two people that I'm really close with that live in Squirrel Hill, that community where the shooting was, and not expecting a response of involved.
Excuse me, who were those two people?
So one was Jesse Irwin, whose family took me in. The other one is a woman named Michelle Rosenthal. And Michelle was the director of player development for the Steelers in the community relations department. She worked for the mayor. I was her intern in my college years. And she texted me back and said, not good. My two brothers are there. One shot. Not confirmed if he's dead. We don't know about the other. And you just sink. And I can remember prepping to call that game that day. And here we go. And I'm texting her the day going on. Of course, she's not answering her phone. There's so much happening. And the next morning, I get another alert where they release the names. And Cecil and David Rosenthal were on them. And the worst part about that was, of course, talking to Michelle and hearing that story. And her two brothers were mentally challenged. But honestly, it was talking to my mom, whose parents were Holocaust survivors. And her dad was in a concentration camp. And I'm telling her the story. And she knows Michelle and her family. And she goes, man, it reminds me of the Holocaust because two guys got executed. And if you think about it, they were the two people that probably welcomed everybody in. They were the two pseudo ushers at the synagogue. And that one broke me when my mom said that, thinking of that's real. Like that's the times that we're in and the amount of hate that was there. So, you know, I was crushed. And then to see the city of Pittsburgh slowly, as it always will, piece itself back together, the country do that, the nation, the globe do that of, okay, we can come back together. And you know what can help us is a ball. And I believe in the power of play and the power of a ball. And I believe in the phrase, we all speak ball. And it did that in a small, subtle way, whether it was Pitt winning, the Steelers winning their last couple, you know, it slowly pieced that thing together. And a chance to talk to Michelle the other day. And of course, she's still crushed and will be for a long time. But those little things, you know, they help along the way, man. So it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
Yogi Roth is my guest. I appreciate your thoughts on the story. But there's more to it because ball helps a lot of things. Right. But love, too. As an example, your grandparents, as you mentioned, were Holocaust survivors. And when you talk to them about their time in concentration camps and all the horrific things they witnessed, their message to you has been, Yogi, love wins. Love wins. So when you see so much hate and so much violence in the world, how do you live from a place of love wins?
Well, I think you got to be optimistic. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, I can remember being a boy, you know, sitting across the table just like this and seeing my grandparents. And I remember like yesterday, I had a little cup of ginger ale in this teal glass. And I thought ginger ale was like the coolest thing as a kid. And they would tell their stories. And in short, grandfather was shot 8 times in his upper left shoulder, played dead for a couple of days, saved by a gypsy, heals back to health, and joins the partisan movement, which would save people at night and hide out during the day. And he had lost his first wife, his first child, gone through hell and back. I mean, think about it. When you're in a concentration camp, you don't know if you're taking a shower, if you're going to all of a sudden be breathing gas and your life's over. Flip side, grandmother, she walks home from school one day and her teacher pulls up beside her and says, you can't go home. She says, why? She says, your entire family was just murdered. They were axed to death. And she went on the run from that moment on in her life. Hid out in a farmhouse, wouldn't tell people, obviously, her religion and her faith.
She was how old?
She was 12 when she came home from school and that happened. And as life would have it, of course, as the war ends, those two get on a train, happen to sit next to each other, share their stories, get married, you know, eventually have my mom live in a refugee camp in Germany, and end up taking a boat over to the U.S., and that's why I'm here. But I tell that story and share that story not for anybody's sympathy, but to say when things got hard, they would always look at me and say, hey, man, A, it ain't that tough, and B, love wins. And it never really made sense to me until I got older and started to piece it together. Like, yeah, like, have the goodness in your heart. Hate Auburn, hate Alabama, hate UW, hate Wazoo. That's cool. Like, that's part of sports, but it's not malicious, right? It needs to be in fun, in the spirit of play, in the spirit of humanity, and in the spirit of love because you love your team so much. You love your sport so much. So it took me a while to figure that out, but I always go back to that whenever it's like, oh, shit, man, is it a tough day? Come on, bro.
How tough is it really? Yeah. I mean, what a powerful message. Yogi Roth joining us. So your podcast, Life Without Limits, for those who have not heard it before, what does that mean, Life Without Limits?
Well, to me, it's you got to go for it, you know, and I think that in everything, you know, whether that's, you know, jumping off the high dive, you're going to hold your nose, put your hands up. I'll put my hands up, right? You're going to walk on a pit or play at a small school. To me, I had to walk on. I had to play in front of that crowd. I had to show and prove to myself that I could or couldn't do it. and got lucky and played. And that's kind of just been my way that I live my life. It's not a stick your chest out and look at me, let's go big. It's I just think that innately we want to play big until somebody says don't, until we get slapped down. You think of all kids, if you're around them, they have this childlike fascination with everything. They want to charge. They want to go. They want to go for it.
They don't know any different.
They don't know any different until they're taught. Don't throw a whole shot into cover two. Just check the ball down. Don't look somebody in the eye and ask an uncomfortable question in this society. Be your son who's on his way to college. Just be passive. Just no issues. F that. I mean, let's go for it. Let's grow. You know, you're either going to live in a growth mindset or a fixed mindset, right? And to me, it's I want to learn, and whether that's learning through failing or learning through success, but the only way you learn is you take shots. It's why I probably love Garner Minshew's story. He's gone for it. Could have played it safe and been a GA at Bama, been Tua's backup, coach there. Okay, life is great. He said, you know what? Let's take a run with this Mike Leach character, and now I'm leading the nation in passing. Yeah,
in 30 seconds or less, and I didn't mean to spend so much time on things that are not football related because you work so hard at it, but you're so interesting to me. 30 seconds or less, what's that say about Mike Leach that he did what he did with Minshew?
He's coach of the year. He's national coach of the year. You know, to keep that team together the way they have. And look, he's an interesting guy. He's a unique guy. He's very unorthodox. Didn't even play college football, right? But he's got this mind that is very artistic. You talk to him about it. He's a guy who, I'll talk to him at midnight when he's walking home. He's a late night thinker. And late night thinkers are probably like you, myself, a lot of artists and creative minds go there. So it's special. It's powerful. And now he's got his team on the verge in the Apple Cup of doing things they haven't done in a while.
Big showdown. Pac-12 football analyst and a pros pro. Look at that right on cue. A filmmaker and New York Times bestselling author, host of the Life Without Limits podcast. And once again, our first in-studio guest ever and the only person with a custom greeting on this show. Somebody I consider a very good friend and somebody I respect immensely. Yogi, that was awesome. So good to see you.
Much love, brother. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, my man. Happy holidays. We'll talk again soon. News just in. The Rap Sheet reports via Twitter, at Rap Sheet. Source, the Redskins are signing free agent Mark Sanchez. After today's large workout, he has several points of familiarity on the staff and will back up Colt McCoy. So, they worked out. Others like T.J. Yates, E.J. Manuel, Kellen Clemens, the Sanchez plays his way in, works his way in, earns the right to back up Colt McCoy. Let's say about Mark Sanchez for a minute. Former top five pick of the Jets. He has spent time with the Eagles, the Broncos, the Cowboys, the Bears. He was cut loose this spring by Chicago. He has been coached by three of the offensive assistants who work under Jay Gruden. His Redskins debut will come 6 years to the day after the butt fumble. But that's not what I think of. I know most of you, if I were to hit you with, all right, Mark Sanchez, reaction, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Butt fumble. I get that. I understand that. Not me. Honestly, full transparency, not me. Not me. The Sanchez was long a friend of the program. So when I first think of Mark Sanchez, I mean, I think about him getting them to the conference championship a couple of times. I think about the butt fumble, of course. I'm not going to say I don't, but it's not the first thing that comes to mind. Nope, the first thing that comes to mind is his legendary visit to Radio Row back in the day. Mark, what is up?
Rome and clones. What up?
That's it. The only guest I know who acknowledges the clones off the very top. Why do you do that, Mark?
Well, they're a big part of the show. I'm a fan of the show. My dad, the only one he asked about before I come out here, before we start hobnobbing here, is you doing Rome? You doing Rome? So we used to listen to it in the car when I was a little kid. You got Bart Scott's back, so it's a natural fit.
All right, so this is not a guy who, that was a guy in his prime. That was at a time when he was killing it. Top five pick, won some huge games at USC, was on the cover of GQ. I mean, my man was living so freaking large. So large. I remember I ran into Mark's brother, Nick. And, you know, we had never met before, but Sanchez was such a big part of the program. I said, Nick, what are you doing? Because it was right near my house. I said, what are you doing, bro? He's like, no, I had some business here at the golf course. What are you doing? I'm like, nothing, man. Come up to the house. We smashed cocktails. Had a great time. He was responsible. We talked about the Sanchez. Well, the Sanchez is back, yo. He's back. Welcome back, Sanchez. Get your head in the playbook. Washington is in Dallas. this Thursday. You do not have a lot of time. This show definitely has Mark Sanchez's back.
Thank you very much. Clones, I'm out. Peace.
That's why. That's why this show has his back, because he had nothing but respect for the clones. The guy would shout out to the clones before he said hello to me. Much respect. Let's go to the phones quickly. My thoughts on Condoleezza Rice and what a weird story that was. I mean, again, nothing but respect for her, her intellect, what she's accomplished, her leadership ability, but a head coaching candidate when she's never been a head coach or any kind of coach in football? Weird story. But not as weird as it seems. Let's go to Buffalo. Rick in Buffalo. Rick, brother, what's up?
Just when I thought Jim Harbaugh couldn't stoop any lower as a human being, I caught his sideline act during Saturday's game. Instead of coaching up young men and leading by example, all this D-bag worried about was scoring his next tobacco fix. Did you see that close-up, Jim? Harbaugh had a mouthful of Copenhagen stuffed in that big fat face and was spitting all over himself. What's on tap for next week, coach? Cracking a beer at halftime and watching porn on the scoreboard. And I'm so tired of Michigan football's white trash fan base carrying on like they've actually won something. You played one good team and they kicked your ass. But of course, Mark in Boston's all over Twitter posting pics of his freshly refinished Harbaugh tattoo. I've always said, Jim, you show me with someone with a tattooed of another dude, and I'll show you the biggest effing loser ever to walk the planet. I'm actually hoping Michigan makes the playoffs just so I can laugh my ass off when they lose to Alabama by 50. War the red hot, shiny, up and coming Buffalo Sabres. War Kyle and Green Bay coming to town for the game on December 18th. Ninth row, center ice. What can I say? I'm the original big-time baller. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the crew, Jim. And as always, thanks for the vine. I'm out.
And as always, rack his ass. Like, Rick is one of the only callers that as he's going through his call, I'm thinking to myself, man, I hate it that this call is going to end. I hate that this call is going to end. Come on, man. I know you have more. Come on, Rick. I don't know when you're going to call again. I know this call is going to end any second now, and I hate it. He is one of the rare callers. Most of you, when you call, I can't wait for your calls to end. I mean that sincerely. The rare caller, and there's probably five or eight of you where I do not want it to end, where I'm hyped when you call and I do not want to end. Hawk, I know that's the case for you. That's your idol. Otherwise, you'd be picking up the other calls. Go ahead and do it. 1-800-636-8686. Rick in Buffalo mentioned that Colin Green Bay, he's coming. He's coming to Buffalo, among other things, to go to a Sabres game. And he cracked back, he clapped back, not only on Jim Harbaugh and him being a bad role model because he's on the sideline stuffing his fat face with Copenhagen and spitting on everybody. His point is, what kind of a message is that to send? What kind of a role is that? Or what kind of a thing is that for a leader of young men to do? He said, what's going to happen next? You going to crack open a beer at halftime? Watch porn on the scoreboard or something? Anyway, Michigan's playing some good ball now. Oh, and what do you know? There's Ohio State. There's Ohio State just barely surviving Maryland. Surviving Maryland and opening up as a dog against Michigan. That's how badly they've fallen. That's how badly Ohio State's fallen off. They've owned Michigan since Harbaugh got there, and they open up as dogs. This email says, hey, Rome, the Bears defense did a great job. Even we couldn't realize how many times we saw Cousins lying vertical on the ground. Signed, a Southern family reunion. How about I just run that back one more time? The Bears defense did a great job. Even we couldn't believe how many times we saw Cousins lying vertical on the ground. signed a Southern family reunion. Lee in Vancouver. You know, sometimes you hear, you know, things happen on Rome show that you can't find on other shows. That can only happen on that show. And it's a good thing. A lot of times it's true and it's a bad thing. Like, honestly, what other nationally syndicated radio program would get an email like that? Honestly, name one other nationally syndicated show or host that would get that email other than me. And you can't say, well, that's because you encourage it, Rome. You endorse it. You condone it. None of that's true. Ah, cousins lying vertical. Oh, I get it. Family members having sex with each other. Good one, Lee. Hey, Lee, that's one of those times when Canada's not good for the show. Usually it is. More often, it's not when you're participating, but rather when Tyler from Shredmonton's in. Or his bro. All right, so I'm setting this thing up. Come on now, finish strong. It's a short week. It's a short week, a short sample size. I need you to do better. There you go. He said, I've always said, you show me a tattoo of a dude, of another man, and I'll show you the biggest bleeping loser walking the face of the planet. And the way he positioned that, not only a tattoo of Jim Harbaugh, but a freshly minted redo of that tattoo. Anyway, this guy can handle himself. I don't need to defend him. It got back to him or he was listening. He didn't waste any time. Let's go to Boston. Mark in Boston. I mean, I'm like almost talking like Rick now. Let's go to Mark in Boston. Did you hear how Rick did you? You must have or you wouldn't be calling. Mark, what's up?
Hi, Jim. Hey, normally I'm not one to respond to such nonsense, but when you see this ugly, bald loser constantly peacocking on your radio waves, it begs the question, is this all we've got? Between Rex's mediocrity, Liz sounding like Woodscope's mom bragging about his progress report, or some weirdo from Southfield duplicating all of Brad's wacky voices, someone has to come in here and provide some sanity. And for that, you need a Michigan man. And Rick, to answer your question, yes, I have been a competent Michigan fan on Twitter. Because they matter. You know what doesn't matter? Posting a weird gallery of photos about taking your crusty old man to a Goo Goo Dolls concert, you dork. And every time you call, I have to see that giant red beak of yours on my TV screen. Jim, I know I'm feeling the Christmas spirit, so happy holidays to you and yours. Hey, Rudolph in Buffalo, do you get all the fat, wasted Bills Mafia dorks hobbling from breaking their backs on folding tables to line up behind you so they can follow that giant peak of yours through the blizzard to get home? Rick there with you. No, so bright. You probably won't wrestle tonight, especially if you're spending your weekends going on man dates with Kyle in Green Bay on another one of his homeless clone vision quests. And let's get something real clear about Harbaugh. You would lick this tattoo off my arm if it meant for 1 second that you would coach that joke of a football team of yours. You're a second-rate clone from a second-rate city talking second-rate smack. So take that for data, Four Eyes. Go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Mark the Nomad and follow me on my fan cast this weekend. Or Rick's nose popping up from my turkey so I know it's done.
Good night now!